In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Whether or not you believe the 2020 election was stolen, and whether you believe it was through rule changes, whether it was by mysterious ballots that appeared in the middle of the night, or voting machine tampering, or for whatever reason, the Democrat propaganda machine that sprang into action is what has continued the problems and the distrust in our elections right up through 2024. What I mean by that is whenever Donald Trump or anybody else tried to question the 2020 election, the Democrats called that the big lie. Any challenges, any questions about a potentially fraudulent election, it was all the big lie. The Democrats and their media propagandists were trying to compare Trump to Hitler and his propaganda minister, Joseph Goebbels, who was alleged to have said, if you tell a lie big enough and often enough, it becomes the truth. The damage isn't comparing Trump and his supporters to Nazis. The problem was and continues to be that Biden and the Democrats and the media shut down the debate, shaming anybody that dared to ask questions. You could even see it in the recent debates where the moderators tried to shame both Trump and Vance and paint them as election deniers. The message is quite clear even now, don't you dare question the outcomes of an election, especially one that we won. That is the exact opposite of what ought to happen in a democracy, where free speech and the ability to question, including questioning election results, ought to reign supreme. But by shutting down the debate, it had the exact opposite effect of what they intended. They wanted people to stop questioning it, but because they wouldn't allow questions, they only invited more questions, more suspicion, that clearly there must be something they didn't want people to see. And people ought to ask questions. Every election should be questioned, just like every bit of science ought to be questioned, or religious dogma. If you're not allowed to question something, the very first question should be, why not? Why shouldn't it be questioned? The truth does not mind being questioned. It welcomes it. Lies, big or small, hate to be questioned, which is why they must be. On this week's show, as we rush toward Election Day, it's important to get past whatever it is you believe about the past election. We can't fix it. We can't undo it. Yes, election fraud is a legitimate concern, but sitting it out this time won't solve anything. What you need instead is a spine of steel, that you will get out there no matter what, and not just you, but multiply your vote by bringing other people out with you. On today's show, we're going to be talking about getting out the vote with an organization that is doing exactly that and leading the way. They have been tremendously successful so far, and we want to find out what they're doing that is working so well. And there are opportunities for you to help. And then in the second half of our show, we'll talk with Dennis Linthicum, who is running for Oregon's Secretary of State, and if he can get elected, he's exactly the kind of person that can help clean up the voting situation here in Oregon. If you're a fan of One American News, you probably knew Caitlin Sinclair, who was a senior political correspondent for them, but she is now the official spokeswoman for Turning Point Action. Caitlin, thanks for joining us today.
Awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure, absolutely. You know, we talked previously with Matthew Martinez, the Chase the Vote strategist for Turning Point Action, but real quick, just to help those who don't know, what does Turning Point Action do?
Well, that is our numbers guy, Mr. Martinez. He does all the numbers, and he somehow memorizes them all, so I don't know how he does it. So Turning Point Action, we've really been focused on recruiting activists, registering voters, and then chasing those ballots. So Turning Point Action is of course, a part of Turning Point USA, which is the C3. We're at the C4 side. And so we're able to, of course, talk politics, endorse candidates, and just talk more openly overall. And so really, if you look at some of our recent initiatives, we have Commit 100, which is making people from all over the country come to Arizona, come to Wisconsin, and chase 100 early day ballots, 100 election day ballots with us. And this is one of the largest initiatives that the GOP has seen in decades. So we're doing a lot of work, grassroots and on the groundwork stuff, which the RNC should be doing, yes. But we all know how that's been going, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, they have, I've been a Republican my whole life. I've been around party politics starting in about 2009, and my observations have been that Oregon's Republican Party through that time had been pretty terrible about getting out the vote, but they're not alone, and Republicans in general can be pretty bad about getting out the vote efforts. So I am really glad that you guys are waking them up to that, because I do think that this year, the RNC and the state parties as well are all really seeing how truly important this is. You know, in doing the research for today's show, I came across an interview of yours on WABC in New York City, the Sid and Friends in the Morning Show. It aired soon after Kamala had been picked to replace Joe. And in that, you said that as a young woman yourself, you had some interesting thoughts, really, about young women and women in general. And you had said that you think that it's unfortunate that the women out there are the ones who are responsible for the deterioration of our society. And you kind of got off onto some other aspects of Kamala's anointing there and didn't come back around to that point. But I'd be real curious to know more about your thoughts there. Why do you think women are responsible for society deteriorating?
Sure. Well, I think if you look at the recent polling and numbers, it is the female, white, educated women in this country that are tending to vote more liberal. They're tending to believe this rhetoric coming from the left that, you know, Kamala Harris is going to be the one to save women's reproductive rights, that the Democrats are the party for the women. And you find that it's the men in this country right now that actually are longing for the values that made this country great in the past, the core principles and values that we all once really cherish. And that is God as a centerpiece of in society, reinstilling faith and the family unit, Mark. And you don't see the females in this country getting on that bandwagon as strongly and poignantly as the males in this country. The men want a return to masculinity. They want a return to femininity. They want to start families. They want to pursue the American dream. They want a chance at that. And you see this even down to the college level, of course, where Charlie Kirk is going into all these colleges constantly talking and engaging these folks. Look at the fraternity brothers at North Carolina Chapel Hill that were the ones that, that held up that flag that day.
Right.
So I think it's the women in this country that are mistaken and not focused on doing the research and their messaging. And the males in this country, again, seem to understand what's important. And so that's kind of what I said to Sid that day. And that was my elaboration.
Well, speaking of women, news broke this week in the Daily Mail that Doug Emhoff, Kamala's husband, it turns out, slapped his girlfriend so hard it spun her around. This was back in 2012, if I remember right. And, you know, we've seen the Democrat Party not be able to define what a woman is. We've seen wife beating become an Olympic sport. And Democrats are okay with that as they push even more men into women's sports. And yet not a peep out of the Democrats over this revelation about Doug Emhoff. Is that the next degradation here that Democrats are okay with beating up women as long as their candidate of choice gets elected? We'll just look the other way.
I think you, again, look at how Kamala's polling with the men. And there's, of course, this huge gender divide right now with both candidates, right, Mark? So you have former President Trump, who is doing way better with the males in this country and needs to do better with getting some of the women, especially the suburban moms and females, on board with his platform. And then you see Kamala Harris really doing pretty poorly with the males out there. So I think when you look at someone like Doug Emhoff, who, yes, was accused of slapping his girlfriend, we also have proof that he cheated on his ex-wife with the nanny, got her pregnant. I mean, is this really the man that you want the males in this country to emulate and look up to?
Exactly.
I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly right. So, okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Coming up, we want to get an update on how Turning Point Action has worked to get the vote out in swing states and what they're doing to win. And speaking of getting the vote out, one thing that does discourage some people from voting are concerns about election fraud. But of course, the Democrats tell us there is no election fraud, and that's true. There isn't when you don't look, but when you do, there's plenty to see. All that coming up with Caitlin Sinclair, official spokeswoman for Turning Point Action. And And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Caitlin Sinclair. She is the official spokeswoman for Turning Point Action. They are working to register voters to get out the vote, including chasing ballots, not ballot harvesting, chasing ballots. There's a big difference. Their focus is on the swing states, including Arizona, where they are headquartered, Michigan, and Wisconsin. So how are your get out the votes efforts going in those in those states? And why not also Pennsylvania or Georgia?
Well, yeah. So, of course, the Trump camp is focused, and I know this for a fact, they're focused on Pennsylvania and Georgia, right? That's been their game plan for some time now. Of course, overall, we've all been looking at some of these states, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin, Nevada, North Carolina. Of course, it's all the pundits have been talking about, right? So what does it look like, though, when you take the efforts the Trump camp is putting into Pennsylvania and Georgia? You win those two states, you pretty much won the election. We could do that math. But, Mark, what does it look like, let's say, if Donald Trump were to lose the state of Pennsylvania? You look at those polls even just this morning, I was taking a peek, and these races are neck and neck right now. So
yes.
Donald Trump loses the state of Pennsylvania, let's say, hypothetically, he would absolutely, in that case, need to win the state of Arizona. And then if that's the case, we would have to pick up another state somewhere. And the perfect state would be, you know, easiest amount of Electoral College votes, enough Electoral College votes would be the state of Wisconsin. So that's kind of been plan B. It's absolutely been where our firepower at Turning Point has been, really just dominating these two states and looking at them more broadly. So when you break up the state of Wisconsin by counties, we're targeting more of those suburban areas, going after those suburban moms, talking about things like making America healthy again, talking to that new mom, that young mom, that single female in these suburban areas, and seeing if we can get them on board. But really overall, Turning Point Action is focused on the low propensity voters in this country. And I always find this quite interesting to explain. And I wonder if your listeners will follow along. So low propensity voters, what that actually means is that someone has just not gotten out to vote, isn't encouraged to get out to vote, maybe in the past two or four election cycles. So the low propensity voters in this country, though, they are Donald Trump supporters. We've done this research. We have those stats. But they're just not encouraged to vote. So that's what a low propensity voter is. And those are the folks that we have been targeting, knocking on doors, telling them that their vote absolutely does count, and making sure that they have a plan to vote. And we have had bodies on the ground. We just launched our new initiative, which is kind of a play on Commit 100, Mark. It's Paid 100. So we're 30 something days out, and we at Turning Point are now paying Americans to come be in this fight with us, come door knock, come register voters, come make sure that your neighbor, your community leader, your church, your friend that you go to church with on the weekends has a plan to vote, because this is going to be an election based on margins. It's going to be an election that comes down to that one family member you haven't spoken to in a few years, that one friend of yours who's a little bit weary about the election system. It's going to come down to that person you run into at the grocery store. It really is. So having these bodies on the ground, helping us door knock, helping us register voters, we've already had thousands of applicants sign up. And I want to be clear with your listeners, this is for the states of Arizona and Wisconsin. We are paying people to be in this fight with us. We'll pay for your hotels. Come hang out with Charlie Kirk and the gang. We're making this too big to rig, and we're having some fun while we do it.
Well, I love it. I absolutely love it. I know you guys have information on your website there, tpaction.com. We'll make sure we link that up on ispyradio.com as well. And, you know, when it comes to getting out the vote, one of the things I consistently hear are people worrying about election fraud. And they say things like, well, why even bother to vote if they're just going to cheat anyway? And, of course, not voting is the worst possible response to that fear. When it comes to election fraud, how do you address concerns about that? And how do you encourage them to get past that election fraud roadblock and to go out there and vote?
Look, I think in this country right now, everyone has their different issues with what's wrong. There's crises after crises that continues to be inflicted upon Americans. This really is an election about the forgotten American, right? We saw that earlier this week on that debate stage with vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance speaking to that forgotten American out there who doesn't feel like they have a voice right now with their elected officials. So I would say to all those struggling Americans, because the majority of us are struggling right now, those struggling Americans, those voters out there that don't have faith in our election system, Donald Trump can't save you. He can't save you until you save him first. And what does that look like? Well, that simply just looks like getting that piece of paper into the ballot box. We can talk election fraud and we can ask questions and we should do all of that. And a lot of people are still talking about the 2020 election. They're still talking about an election that happened 4 years ago. But guess what, Mark? I want to talk about the election that's in 30-something days. That's what Turning Point wants to talk about. That's what we want to focus on. And that would really be my message. We have a clear mission at Turning Point, and I have so many amazing friends that are outside in different arenas, that are lawyers, that are covering the election fraud that occurred in 2020, that are looking at these voting machines and voting records, and they are doing that work. But that's not all of our jobs, right? We all have a mission. We all have a job. And the overall motto is, again, to make this too big to rig. And we cannot do that unless we have every single one of you in this fight with us. So that's really what I would say.
That's right. Getting back to getting out the vote, does Turning Point Action get involved in down ballot races, or is it mainly focused on the presidential race? Because one of my big concerns is that Trump wins and potentially even wins big, but we end up losing control of the House. And as it stands now, I think we'll probably keep the House, and I think we'll likely flip the Senate as well. But what's your take on Congress and the Senate, and how is Turning Point Action getting out the message, make sure you vote down ballot?
I think we're, you know, really focused on making sure that people have an education, right? So we're focusing on policies, we're focusing on vision, we're focusing on an agenda, which again is what you heard from J.D. Vance the other day on that debate stage. Mm-hmm. He was not focused on the minutiae. He was not talking about these career politicians who most Americans right now do not have a lot of faith in for obvious reasons and many reasons. And they don't want more career politicians. They don't necessarily want to talk every day about the Congress members and what's going on in the Senate and what the latest bill is that's not really getting passed. And again, they don't feel like their voices are being heard. They love Donald Trump because he is not a career politician.
Yes.
I believe in this country right now, Americans are longing more than anything else, Mark. They're longing for authenticity. They're longing for someone to say, I hear you, I understand you, and I'm fighting for you. And I think focusing more on the agenda and the mission and the vision and how we can achieve that kind of encompasses voting down ballot. And that's kind of what we've been doing. And again, you heard that earlier this week on Tuesday night from J.D. Vance, not focusing so much on the noise, but focusing exactly on the agenda that he's going to deliver for the American people.
Right. Well, I think authenticity is certainly something that Kamala is trying to fake, but it's not working so well. So, all right, let's go and take a break. We're talking with Caitlin Sinclair, the official spokeswoman for Turning Point Action. They've been meeting with a lot of success. Why is that? What are they doing? Well, we'll dig more into that next. We're just 30-some short days until Election Day, and we're talking with Caitlin Sinclair, the official spokeswoman for Turning Point Action, an organization dedicated to turning out the vote. They have plenty that you can do, and I would highly recommend that you go to tpaction.com. That's tpaction.com. And as always, check the show notes on today's show page on ispyradio.com. Today's show is 14-40, where we'll have that and other resources that you can access, including the link to download their Get Out the Vote app. So you guys have met with a lot of success registering people, and now the next phase, of course, is going to be starting soon, getting that vote out. And perhaps one of the surprising areas we've had success is with Gen Z. Getting back to another that interview of yours, you had said that you no longer think of Gen Z as being the most apathetic generation, that they now want to see America First values restored, and they realize they've been lied to. What has awakened them?
Oh, well, I think when you look at my generation, the millennials and the Gen Zers, look at what we've grown up with, right? We've grown up in this post-9/11 era, with endless wars, with debt looming over our head, with zero chance at the American dream. Gen Zers, Mark, are struggling to find work right now. We are drowning in tuition expenses, facing skyrocketing food and gas prices, increasing political and economic chaos and instability, and that is all that the Gen Zers know. So this election year, there's a total of 41 million eligible young voters, Gen Zers, and 8 million plus young Americans are aging into this electorate year. So that's huge.
Yes.
And J.D. Vance spoke as the first millennial vice presidential nominee. Hmm. He spoke directly to the younger generation on Tuesday night. He gave us that four-letter word that my generation seems to really love, and that four-letter word is hope. Hope. Hope that the younger Americans will not have to forfeit their right to the American dream. Hope that we can still start families, that we can still maybe do better than our parents, because as you know, this is the first generation that's set to not do better than their parents yes. did. So in times of so much turbulence and uncertainty, I think what awoke in the Gen Zers was partly the pandemic. I think that was a little peek under the kimono as to the levels of deceit and corruption that maybe we were semi-familiar with, but it was just so poignantly on display back in the, yes. those crazy, disgusting times. And so now, topple that with, of course, all these crises that I just listed, and the idea that they're really longing for someone real. They're longing for real role models. Look, I mean, look at who the Gen Zers, and again, my generation, gets to look up to in this crazy world. Kamala Harris has been paying famous pop stars and celebrities to come twerk at her rallies. And as sad as that is, those are the idols of my generation. I mean, we need better role models in this country right now for the young people. We do. And so, and we need a real leader. We need a real leader. And Donald Trump really just so masterfully exhibits just that. I think that's kind of, so what woke them up was a bit of the COVID pandemic, a bit of just what we've grown up with, and kind of just being fed up, saying, wait a minute, this isn't right. The levels of deception, the levels of corruption, we want to come back to real policy and vision. And I want to be able to spread that message to all of our young voters at Turning Point, because this is an organization solely made up of young people and run by the younger generations. And spreading that message is kind of what we've been doing. But I think that's what first started their movement of feeling like they need to stand up and make a difference. And the beautiful thing right now in this country, I know there's so many crises. I know there's a lot of turmoil. I know, we're on the brink of World War III and we're not even allowed to discuss that. But things are a lot better right now than they were back in 2016 or 2020. We weren't even allowed to exist on social media back then, conservatives or Republicans. Right. All alternative ideas, they were suppressed. The mainstream media completely controlled our public perception. And I think that really played a role in how the younger generations also got this firepower beneath them, because we grew up with social media. We grew up in this era of censorship and cancel culture. Well, not anymore. The public, including these young generations, Mark, they're more awake than they have ever been. The mainstream media no longer has a monopoly on the entire narrative. Part of that is, Elon Musk, thankfully, buying out X.
Yes.
But all of their corruption, meaning the mainstream media, all of those three-letter agencies of our government, the FBI, the CIA, Homeland Security, all of these agencies, their corruption is on full display for the American people. And the young generations have also witnessed all of that every single day. I think the things we get to witness now on social media and having a bit more of a open rhetoric and open narrative, this causes more normies, I'll say, to wake up. And that's exactly what's happening. So a few different factors that have kind of played into this massive awakening that I am so excited about. And I know, again, missiles are flying and it seems like the world is ending, but we have so much more going for us this time around. Hmm.
Well, how does one persuade a member of a Gen Z? I mean, what really resonates with them? Because I know a few Gen Z members who are really lost in the dark, depressing, hate-mongering swamp of the left. So what are some messages that really resonate with them?
Well, I think, look, we have 30-something days. I hope that we can encourage President Trump to try to close that or bridge that gender gap a bit. And how I think we can do that, again, with only 30-something days left, is to focus on the MAHA message, Mark, which is make America healthy again, and the health revolution that he and RFK Jr. intend to lead. This is so important in such a stark contrast to the Democrats and the deals that they have cut with big pharma, with big agriculture, with big tech, with big health to keep us all sick addicted and popping pills. They want us weak. They want us depressed. They want us anxious. So for a party that's so focused on reproductive rights and gender-affirming care of minors, you would think the Democrats would want to also talk about making America healthy, but they're not. So I find that this is a – I'm going to just speak for my generation for a second. I think this is a great topic to maybe hone in on, and I think it's a possible topic that we can get some of the females in the next 30 days to say, okay, this is an issue that's not red versus blue. This is an issue that's not Republican versus Democrat. And you know, health for not only us and our generation, but our future, for our kids. We look at these record rates of metabolic dysfunction, of obesity, of depression, of anxiety, and millennials and Gen Zers, we are the ones suffering. Yes. We are the ones that have some of the lowest fertility rates this country has ever seen, some of the most disgusting rates of chronic disease. We are the ones that are suffering, so we have to be the ones to make a difference and take the charge. I think that's an amazing topic to focus on, to encourage some of these young voters, and again, to bring some of those females over to the conservative movement.
Well, I think those are awesome ideas, and I got to tell you that if Gen Z is truly embracing core American values, then that's incredibly encouraging to those of us in older generations like Gen X and so on. We do have to let you go, unfortunately. Caitlin Sinclair, she is the spokeswoman of Turning Point Action. Their website, again, tpaction.com. Caitlin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. And you can go to tpaction.com/paid100 for anyone, any of your listeners that want to get involved.
Awesome. I'd like to welcome Dennis Lithcomb back to the show. He's a former state senator and now running for the Secretary of State here in Oregon as the Republican candidate. Dennis, it is great to talk to you today.
Good morning. It's great to be here this morning, and we've got some interesting topics on the table, and it's mostly about elections. Everybody's got the November 5th election date on their mind, and we ought to just churn it around in the barrel as well.
Yeah, so you're right. We did want to have you on to talk about your race as well, but we also have some recent developments within the current Secretary of State office where the Elections Division suddenly discovered that illegal immigrants were being registered as voters, something that they had assured us, oh, that would never happen, that doesn't happen. But before we get there, I'd like to talk about some potential election fraud in other states, Arizona in particular, and we had touched on this the notion of potential election fraud with our previous guest, because when it comes to getting out the vote, one of the things I consistently hear, and probably you do as well, is that people worry about election fraud. And they say things like, well, why bother to vote if they're just going to cheat anyway? And of course, that's the wrong response. When you know they're going to cheat, you need to make it, as Trump has said, too big to rig. And so we do want to address that potential fear. And people, I think, do have some reasons to be concerned, because recently when they looked there in Arizona, it turns out that Arizona failed to check citizenship status for 98,000 voters, except, whoops, when they looked a little further, it turned out it was 218,000 voters. And this has existed for 20 years going back into the 90s. And this matters because in Arizona in 2020, Trump lost Arizona by only like 11,000 votes. So how in a situation, you know, of course, you're not running for Secretary of State of Arizona, but I'd imagine they have similar laws. How is it that that many ineligible voters are possible when we've heard things like, well, election fraud just doesn't possibly happen?
Well, see, that's the hard part. There's no direct correlation between the phrase election fraud is rarely happens and what the truth of the matter is. Remember, the people who are in power, the winners write the textbooks. The people who are in power have the propaganda machine. They've got government performing their beck and call at every whim and will. And so, of course, the news is all positive. When I am in a candidate forum with my opponent, he's always claiming that I am contrary to the election process, and he wants to encourage people to have faith in government. But you cannot have faith in government if government is not faithful. And that's the problem that we face. Government has not been faithful. Over the last 10 years, we have many examples that everyone remembers. Over the past 50 years, we've got thousands of examples. And when you see government rigging the system for its own gain, benefit, and power, all of a sudden you realize that you've got to do more than just be, you know, compliant. You've got to air your grievance. And that's why free speech is such an important facet of this conversation.
Well, absolutely. And one of the things, well, when you look at something like that with Arizona that's going on, and they've got 218,000 voters that never provided their citizenship status, how is that even possible that that gets through the various gates that are supposed to protect our elections?
Well, the gates are all software gates. Remember, my background is in software development, database management, high-end stuff. And, you know, what we did when you set up a program, you set up the validation requirements. What do we need to validate that this is actually a valid driver's license in the state of Oregon? And so, you know, there are various rules for driver's license. California has a single letter followed by seven digits. New York has nine digits. Texas has one letter followed by eight digits. Oregon is only seven digits. Washington has three letters followed by seven digits. They're all different. They're across all 50 states. They are all different. And they aren't necessarily assigned by year. So, you know, the 001s are a long, long time ago, and the 999s are just yesterday. You can't tell by looking at the number when it was assigned or not assigned. And so without a photo ID, you're really in a mess, because what the current mail-in ballot system requires is there are two questions. One, will you be 18 by the time of the next election? Yes or no? And two, are you a citizen of the United States? Yes or no? And then there's a red letter line right under that that says, if you answered no to either of the above questions, do not fill out this form. But if we have 20,000, or I meant to say million. If we have 20 million foreign nationals, illegal aliens, undocumented workers, asylum seekers, whatever label you want to apply to that 20 million people who are currently in violation of federal law, they didn't come through the gate, they came through a hole in the wall, then they are already, you know, potential criminals, not convicted, but potentially acting in an illegal fashion, in a criminal fashion. And we're expecting these, quote, criminals to answer this question truthfully and honestly. Now, there's a logical conundrum that you cannot escape.
Right. Well, there's a lot yet to unpack on this, but we are up against the clock. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dennis Lithicum. He's running for Secretary of State here in Oregon. And welcome back. We're talking today to Dennis Lithicum. He is running for he's running as the Republican candidate for the Secretary of State here in Oregon. Election is coming up very fast here on November 5th. And yeah, one of the things, I think we ought to back up a little bit, because you're talking about how people get registered, how some of these illegal aliens get registered to vote when they shouldn't be. And just to remind people that there are two ways, actually, that illegal immigrants are able to register. One is, as you said, through the motor voter registration. You get a license, you get registered, and that's one means. But there's another one: when they get handed Obamacare applications as part of that bill, anyone who registers for Obamacare can and often will be sent registration documents regardless of immigration status. And as I understand things, whether it's through motor voter or through Obamacare, the individual secretaries of the states and elections divisions are then supposed to double check to make sure that they are, in fact, citizens. So do I have those two potential loopholes for how somebody can end up in those voter rolls correct?
Yes, and there's more loopholes than that. You know, here in Oregon, House Bill 4133 was passed, which allows third parties, aside from Obamacare being a third party, you know, medical service provider organization, third-party nonprofits, NGOs, I typically call them nonprofits for profit, because they're actually doing this with taxpayer dollars, and we don't know, we don't have any idea how they are spending their money. I can't audit them as Secretary of State. I cannot audit them. The legislature cannot audit them. The only thing you see is their federal 990 filing, which says how much money did they take in and how much money did they expend. And they have a tax status of nonprofit. It doesn't mean that all the players, the staff, and the employees didn't make a profit. It means that they have a tax status as a nonprofit. And so that's a loophole that can provide electronic registration, which is simply the last four digits of a Social Security number, and a digital signature. And the easiest way to sign at the Home Depot, Walmart, or for the UPS delivery is just a straight horizontal line. You just go with your finger, and that's recorded as a signature. Mm. It's deemed legal. And
aren't they supposed to go back and check to say, okay, you've signed this, you're claiming to be a citizen here. Aren't they supposed to verify that in some way?
Well, they can verify it. The three ways they can verify a driver's license, because it's a physical document. Show me your driver's license. And that's a picture ID also. So you don't have to show the driver's license. You put the number down. You can verify it with a passport, which is also a photo ID identifier, and you could validate it at the source document level. When you ask me for four digits of my Social Security number, there is no validation. There's no way to determine whether I really have that Social Security number or it belongs to my old Uncle Saul. You know, you cannot tell from four digits. You or I cannot walk into the lottery office and say, I won out of nine digits total. I have four of them. And nobody will say, yep, here's your $10 million. It doesn't work like that. It's not enough. And so our system has been corrupted by the majority party. And more people are, you know, and this is just, we're talking about people like they're individuals. What if there's a concerted, organized effort, whether from the Biden administration or from organized crime? What if there's a concerted, organized effort to muck with our election systems and processes? And why did the majority party allow these rules to get so blatantly misaligned with the true concept of one voter, one vote?
Well, it's not just here in Oregon, where suddenly, you know, we found 1,300 illegal voters, but states all across the nation, Oklahoma, Virginia, now Arizona, Georgia, they're really starting to examine their voter rolls, and they're finding not just a few thousand, but hundreds of thousands of people that are not supposed to be on those rolls. So you had a lawsuit here in Oregon. You want to look behind the curtain and see what's going on there. I mean, if Oregon is admitting that there's 1,300 voters on there, how many do you suspect are actually on there that shouldn't be? Are we talking tens of thousands?
Well, see, that's this is the beauty of censorship. With censorship, because you and I, remember, we sued for the ballot images from Jackson County. Mm-hmm. And that the Jackson County clerk told us, sure, you can have the data. We'll be happy to give it to you on a thumb drive. Please provide us with a check for $982,862.17. That's $1 million. No matter how you look at it, $982,000 is as close to $1 million as you and I can ever dream of coming. And that means we never got the data. That means any comment we have is purely speculation, because nobody knows the answer. And if you don't know the answer, and if you are censored or restricted from gaining access to the vital information to determine whether fraud was initiated in Jackson County, then the only thing you have left is your imagination or your conspiratorial concepts.
And speaking of imagination, I mean, why are they so resistant to clean voter rolls? Because it creates the appearance that they want to cheat.
Well, and this is the whole thing, though, because there's no, quote, proof. So this is the quote you will hear from every Secretary of State. There is no proof of widespread fraud. And that proof is the language that negates all of your conspiratorial thinking or your imagination or your lack of trust or lack of transparency on their part. What it does is it puts the onus on you, and they get to claim over and over and over again, it's never been proved. It's never been proved. Well, crack open those records in Jackson County without demanding $1 million from me. And by golly, we could prove it. But without that $1 million paycheck, they're not willing to share the data, and they get to keep it hidden because they know that time is money and information costs are relevant to those who are seeking justice.
And it is relevant because here in Oregon, we had 5 races last time in the House that were decided by less than 1,000 votes. And so if you have thousands and thousands of voters on there that shouldn't be, that creates the potential for fraud. All right, let's go ahead and take our break. And coming up, we'll wrap up with Dennis Lithicum. He's running for Secretary of State here in Oregon. Stay with us. And we're back in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking about the election coming up and talking with Dennis Lithicum. He is running for Secretary of State here in Oregon. That election is coming up fast, November 5th. And ballots are going out, I think, in a week and a half now. So make sure you vote down ballot, not just for the president, but make sure you vote for all of those down ballot races, including Secretary of State. And Dennis is your guy. He certainly has our recommendation. And so, Dennis, in the time that we have left, we've been talking about Oregon not cleaning up its voter rolls like many of these other states. Unfortunately, some of them are taking this pretty seriously. But what's the process to clean up those voter rolls here in Oregon? I mean, who is supposed to keep those rolls clean and to remove inactive people, either because they've moved or perhaps they've died? Is that the Secretary of State's office, or is it the county's responsibilities?
It used to be the county's responsibility. Legislation was passed by the Democrat majority, which took that responsibility. Well, they still leave the manpower requirements at the county level, but the Secretary of State requires a form that requires an affirmative response. In other words, if you move to Florida looking for freedom, then after 10 years, I can send you a form letter that says you've been inactive on our voter roll for the past 10 years. Would you like us to remove you from our voter roll? And the positive affirmation, yes, please remove me, is what's required under law by the Democrat majority. And the truth is, most people living and enjoying the land of freedom in Florida will never say, yes, pull me off your voter roll. They just throw it in or it'll land in the dustbin or wherever. And most people won't respond. It gets even worse when you think about deaths. That's an example of someone renting a U-Haul and driving out. When you die and go underground 6 feet or get cremated, it's the same positive affirmation, which you and I know is completely illogical and unaccomplishable. So why did the Democrat majority in the state of Oregon require this affirmation instead of just an inactive status?
And do they actually have to wait a full 10 years before they send that, or is that hyperbole?
It's a full 10 years.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
And it's full 10 years of inactivity. So now the ruse on the public is, county clerks, the chief elections officer for every county, are white supremacists or MAGA Trumpers or some such vocabulary. And they're actively removing indigenous voters, the impoverished, the disenfranchised, and therefore to stop them from actively removing those weaker classes, we don't let them do that anymore, and we make them ask and seek permission to remove those individuals. Now, in truth, I don't think any of that's happening. I don't, when you say prove it, there's a good illustration prove to me that anybody in Klamath County got removed inappropriately. I don't think it's happening. I think it was just political speak. They were using a sledgehammer to attack a single instance, maybe, where something went wrong and there was confusion. But they, you know, our county clerks are good people. They're doing the job to the best of their ability. And now they've been saddled with a positive affirmation form that, you know, it's just nearly impossible to get meaningful results from that type of question.
Well, as far as being registered, it doesn't necessarily mean that fraud is happening, that because somebody's been there, they've been inactive for 10 years because they're out of the state. But it has the potential for voter fraud where somebody is voting in two states and whatnot. As part of your lawsuit, were you able to get any sense as to whether or not these people that were on the voter rolls that should not have been on the voter rolls were actually voting?
No, because our suit got dismissed. We never actually saw, we were never able to go to the next layer and find out results. And in truth, this, look at, if you've been inactive for 10 years, I can ask you, or I could remove you and tell you, here's my letter to you. You've been inactive for 10 years. If you would like to stay registered to vote, please check here, or please fill out this form at this web address, or, you know, some response from you that says, please keep me on the voter roll. But the truth is, if these are all ballots or voters who don't exist in the real world, i.e. they're dead, they've moved, they're not here, they never were here, then we should be removing them, yes. You know, carte blanche.
Absolutely. So, well, Dennis, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I always love having you on because I always learn something new. I did not know that about that 10-year rule, and I think that's just rather shocking. So I want to wish you the best of luck going forward, and hopefully next time we talk, you will be Secretary of State.
You bet, Yin. You can squeeze me in before then if you'd like. Remember, the voting takes another 8 days, so after November 5th, we keep going for a week.
Really? If you're in Oregon, you still have a little bit of time to get registered if you have not yet, and remember, you have to update your registration if you have moved within Oregon. The deadline to register or to update your registration is October 15th. If you're doing it by mail, it has to be postmarked by the 15th, and it would be a good idea to check your registration before that date to make sure that it's accurate. There have been instances where people's registrations have changed mysteriously. Do be sure to check out today's show page on iSpyRadio.com, show 14-40, and look down in the show notes section for links to our guest websites, especially that Get Out the Vote app from Turning Point Action. This year, we cannot sit things out. We have to be involved. This year, it is on all of us to do more than we have in the past. Don't be discouraged. Take action. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.